One, two, three, four, five, let's go! Thanks for coming. Welcome. I'm Jamie Ray. I'm the host of Fave Five from Fans podcast. It's a podcast all about favorites. Basically, what I do is I invite someone to come on the show, like Lily, my co-host today. Yes, yay. And what we do is we pick a topic, and then we make a list of five of our favorite things. Did you start that? Old people and technology, y'all. Is there a 12-year-old in the crowd who can help us? I'm Jamie with Fave Five from Fans podcast. And so what I normally do is make a list of five favorites along with my guest. Lily has been on the show before where we did our favorite Vincent Price films. And if you don't know who Vincent Price is, you're probably in the wrong room. And you might want to go down and check out three. But what we decided to do now is, as you may be able to see, maybe not, I am older than she is. may not catch it. But so I came up with this idea for us to talk about generational horror. And so what does that actually mean? So it's twofold. First of all, we went back to starting around the 30s, which is pretty much the genesis of the first horror films. That's when the Universal Monsters came out. It kind of kick-started it. Yes, before then, there were some silent films, and there were some others, but we decided not to go that far back. So what we kind of wanted to showcase was what was our favorite movies from each decade, starting in the 30s, and I wanted to see how different our choices would be. And so before we get started, I just want to remind everybody, this is about favorites, so there are no wrong answers. Hopefully, if it's an answer that you just can't even comprehend, in talking about it, maybe you'll kind of understand where we're coming from, and it will give you a better idea of it. So, Lily, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello. My name is Lily, and I am currently a musician and mostly doing that full time. I've known Jamie for a couple years now. Yeah, a couple years now, and we try to talk about podcast episodes, whatever we can. And I probably love horror a little too much, but it's fine.
Not too much. You can't love horror too much. But she schooled me on Vincent Price, y'all. I mean, so this is why she, I feel, is the perfect choice for this. So I hope you enjoy it. Feel free to ask any questions. You go along. Anybody who asks a question or shares something gets a very special limited edition I participated speaker. I participated sticker. And yes, it's limited. It has gold paint on it. Yes, sir.
Is that an otter or red panda on that?
It is an otter, a river otter, to be more specific. That question does not count, though. Because you could say, what time is it? That one won't count either. So let's make sure I'm doing this. Do you see 1930s? Okay, so our first choice from the 1930s, we're going to start with Lily.
So my first choice was Frankenstein from 1931.
When this dead hand moves, the monster created by a man they called Mad is turned loose to strike terror into the hearts of men. To shock women into uncontrolled hysteria.
Elizabeth!
To prey upon the innocence of children. This is the story you've heard about, talked about. The spine-tingling, blood-chilling story that stunned your emotions. Frankenstein.
Don't touch that!
I chose this because I think it just really, it's such a legendary film and just really spoke for the time. And Boris Karloff, just absolute genius and did a lot and put so much into that film. And it was just so memorable and amazing.
It really was. It really was. So part of it is that we're going to, especially in the early phases here, when we talk about from page to stage to screen, this is an excellent example. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it was a book from the late 1800s by Mary Shelley Walsworth. Is that right?
Mary Shelley.
And so then it also becomes a stage production and quickly became a movie. And that is an excellent choice, directed by James Whale.
Yep.
Yeah, great, great. All right. So I'm going to choose. Yes, sir.
I have an interesting tidbit. My film major friends hate this movie.
Really?
They're all film bros, so they're insufferable anyway. But they really hate it because it's not accurate to the book. I've never read the book.
Yeah.
So I'm very shameful. I've never actually read the book. But apparently, it's not accurate. It has its own interpretation. They hate it for.
And it is not accurate. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's okay. If you do get an opportunity to read the book, you'll find out that there's a lot more about the character development. And it's not so much putting the pieces and parts together. And there's also a really great ending to the book where the creature's name is Adam, obviously, at the end. And he and the doctor are basically locked in a struggle. But it's... you can't... It's hard to... I don't mean to take this too much from you, but it's really hard for you to sit here and say, well, this book's not as good as the movie, or this movie doesn't... It's because it's an adaptation. And so I think with what they had at the time and what they did, it was a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
So.
It is a good
movie. 100%. And it was a great year,
yeah,
as a matter of fact, because my choice for 1931 is Dracula, based on the book by Bram Stoker. See, I did that one right. That was also staged, turned into a stage play that was had starring Bela Lugosi. So, yes, sir? Sure. Well, I believe sometimes on certain movies, you'll see, you know, based on blah, 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 or, you know, based on the events of blah, blah, blah. And I think now it's just kind of become to understood that it's not going to be right off of the books. I recently did an episode with an author where we talked about favorite book adaptations. And you'll find in those conversations with people sometimes there's things in the book that you just can't bring to screen. And the end of The Stand from Stephen King is a perfect example of that. I mean, literally the hand of God comes down and grabs a nuclear missile. How are you going to, you know, put that on screen? Pretty poorly if you watch the TV adaptation of it. But sometimes you have to take that and change it to something else. But that's a good question. You get our first I Participated sticker. No, you asked. Totally different.
I didn't know if it was going to be a dumb question.
No, there are no stupid questions. There are no dumb questions at all. So feel free to ask us anything.
Yeah.
But so back to Dracula. So if you can see this tiny picture, you'll notice that this is not Bela Lugosi. So a story that a lot of people don't know. This is Carlos Villara, I believe is his name. So when he decided to make the Dracula film, a lot of times they do what's shoot during the day, which is bright, and then through film processing, you make it dark so that it looks at night. So what they did is they had the American crew come in and film during the day on all of these wonderful sets. And at night, the Mexican Universal Studio arm got to come in and use the same sets with their own crew. So this is actually the Spanish version of Dracula from 1931.
Yo soy Drácula. Mucho gusto en conocerle. No sé qué ha pasado con el cochero, ni con mi equipaje, ni, bueno, con todo esto. Yo creía que me había equivocado de lugar.
Le doy la bienvenida. Escúcheles. Los niños de la noche. ¡Qué música la suya!
And their restrictions were not nearly as tight as they are here in the U.S., even back then. So they were able to kind of push the envelope a little bit more. And a lot of people can't stand to have to, you know, read subtitles. You know, I can't stand dubbing, to be honest. But this movie has so much, I feel, so much more atmosphere, even though Dracula's an incredible film, that's why I have to pick 1931's Spanish version of Dracula.
That's a
all
good
right.
One.
So let's jump to the 1940s. Lily, give us yours.
Okay, so 1940, The Invisible Man returns.
I don't understand. Jeffrey, he's invisible. Why can't I see him?
Oh, he's here, is he?
Let's catch him, Inspector. He wants to kill me.
Here you can't go upstairs.
No good, man. What are you going to do?
Don't be afraid, darling. I can leave any moment I like.
Take care of yourself, darling.
I'll be all right. Helen, don't look at me like that.
Skipper, he didn't kill Michael.
Oh, didn't he? That shows how little you know, dear old Richard.
What I love about this film is that what was good about this film is, of course, Vincent Price.
Of course.
Always.
That name will come up several more times.
Several more times. What I love about it is that it was just picking up where they left off from the first film. After the doctor's brother died, he tried to have a redemption when Vincent Price's character is about to be sentenced to death. And so they use the invisibility serum on him to that way he can get out and then they can clear his name later. But over time, he just starts becoming insane and just evil overall. And basically having that internal struggle with himself. And also the doctor just dealing with his guilt during the plot. And it's just overall such a good film.
So aside from the obvious, why did you choose that one instead of The Invisible Man?
Honestly, I just love the plot more, personally.
Does that have anything to do with Vincent Price?
Well, partially, but also the ending is, I think, what did it for me, too.
Okay.
For sure.
All right.
I'm not
going
to spoil it.
No,
but.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who haven't seen this movie from 1940.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, well, that is an excellent choice. Mine, coincidentally, also has a tie-in with Vincent Price.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. So this is 1940s Abbott and Costello. And if you know who they are, they're the Who's on First, What's on Second guys. So this movie is called Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Look out, chick! Cover up!
The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. Plus the dangerous and terrifying Wolfman, played by Lon Chaney. Plus that fiend out of a nightmare, the vampire Batman, Count Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi. Plus the most dreaded creature of them all, the Frankenstein monster, played by Glenn Strange.
But not only do they meet Frankenstein, they also get to meet the werewolf and Dracula. So this is a great thing where they're working as porters, and this shipment comes in, and of course it's got the monsters and everything, and no one believes poor Lou, but eventually you find out that they are real, and the guys finally get together. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but at the very end, they're like, whew, gosh, I'm so glad that that's over. And then you hear a disembodied voice of Vincent Price saying, hello, is it really over? And he wasn't credited in that film, actually. So we love us some Vincent Price. But that is my choice, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Any questions? Questions? Moving on.
Credited, actually, in
is, you're still not getting a sticker. I'm just saying. You're not. You know.
Got it.
He's going to find a way. Now, if you'd have said, did you know that on Letterboxd he was credited, that would have been a question. So it's just a phrasing. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. 1950s. Hi, come on in.
So my one I picked for the 50s was House on Haunted Hill from 1959.
I'm Vincent Price, and you're invited to my party in the House on Haunted Hill, where so far the ghosts have murdered only 7 people. So won't you come and make it 8? You'll see human heads without bodies. Mysterious pools of blood dripping from the ceiling. The walls move slowly in against you. Don't try to escape, you can't.
And I picked this one because I think it was just the epitome of the late 50s as far as the way that they were approaching horror. And also, fun fact, the skeleton was in fact real, because back in those days they saw it as, we want this to be an A-rated horror movie, not a B-rated horror movie, so we're going to use the real deal.
That makes such a difference in, you know,
yep.
Skeletons.
And, yep.
And really, who's the star of that movie again?
Vincent Price.
Oh, yeah, so Vincent Price. That is a great film. It is actually one of the best colorized versions mm-hmm. that I've ever seen, which if you've ever seen older movies, Turner Classics started doing that early on, and they did a horrible job of it. But this version is, I find, really great. The colors are great, especially with his wife's clothing. The purples come out, the greens come mm-hmm. out, and it's so much fun. And that's great. And it had a great remake in the 90s, mm-hmm. if you ever had a chance to see it. You had another question. Sorry, I'll be right with you. Yes, you want to take that one?
To be honest, I'm not sure on that. I feel like...
Like, did they have to, like, go to the board and, like, ask
them? I think it was from a university lab, actually.
Yes. So when you pass away, you can sign certain forms that allow your body to be used for science or for medical purposes mm-hmm. Or to donate organs for somewhere. And some people will use that time to donate their whole body. So a skeleton can become used for a movie prod if you go through and buy it later on, or it can be loaned out. There's also a lot of... and I don't think they do this anymore, but a lot of other countries that maybe their regulations aren't as high, they could turn around and sell mm-hmm. the skeletons. And if it's anything like Return of the Living Dead, that's exact truth, and don't go look it up on the Letterboxd. You know, that's a great point, because there are at least two camps of when you're looking at a remake. And sometimes you want to see that remake done in a much better way, because maybe the special effects weren't there or the technology wasn't there. And then sometimes you just want to take the core ideals of that story and then do it in a modern take. So you're never going to make everybody happy, which is one of the core reasons. Stop it, you two. I will separate you. So it really comes down to what your personal preference is. I haven't seen that one yet, but I did enjoy the 90s remake. I thought it was a great way to take it and change it. And if you watch some of these movies, you may watch it and think, oh, that's hokey. You know, there's the skeleton and the, well, I can't ruin it anyway. But you've got to remember that at the time, that was the scary stuff. And we're fixing to get into the 60s. And that's really when they started pulling out all the stops to do it. So, great question. You get a participated right there.
This is just because I like
it. I'm not whatever. Oh, it got cold. Yes.
I just wanted to say, you were talking about like how in the past the things they did that looked hokey now are scary. That reminded me of a story. I watched the 1998 and the part where he goes down the drain, I was laughing at my mom. So she was born in the 60s. She was horrified.
Yeah.
She was horrified watching it. I'm like, how do you find it scary? She's just like, you don't understand. At the time, that was terrible.
Exactly. And you know, this is talking about generational. I feel that the younger crowds, the younger horror lovers, have been somewhat desensitized to the horror.
Yes.
Back in these days, sometimes not seeing it was better. It's now you have to see more of it. Now, the remake for It was fantastic. I mean, they went back to the book for more stuff. The effects were incredible, but like I said, and you got to remember that 90s It was on broadcast TV, so you know. But anyway, so speaking of that, my 1950s choice is the Howard Hawks film, the original, The Thing.
Good for you, Scotty. And now, before giving you the details of the battle, I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world, tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the skies everywhere. Keep looking. Keep watching the skies.
Now, this was based on an original short story by Joseph Campbell called Who Goes There? Some of the elements that are in this were in the book. The Thing from 82, I feel, did a better job of interpreting what they were trying to say. When we get to that period, we're going to talk about that. But this was great because you never really got a clear view of the monster until the end. Now, it was, yes, a giant walking carrot man. But because you didn't see him, it hyped up the fear of it. And so when they saw it in the screens, it was, you know, because they set him on fire with electricity and all that stuff. Spoiler alert. If you haven't had 70 years to watch it, I'm sorry. You should go back and see it. But it's, I know, right? A spoiler. But this was great because it really set the tone for what would later come in the 80s, the paranoia and the fear of not the fact that the creature was changing into different things, but if it was a totally unknown organism. And it wasn't a hokey-looking monster with seven tentacles waving around. It was something that we had never seen before and encountered before. So I'll always love this movie. This was one of my dad's favorite films, this one and The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes.
So we would watch those all the time. So, all right, well, now we're getting into the swinging 60s. Let's hear your choice.
So my choice was Eyes Without a Face from 1960. It is a French film. It is about a doctor who, his daughter, Christiane, has been in a terrible accident, and everyone thinks she is dead, but he has been secretly keeping her alive. She basically has no face, and so his assistant, Edna, goes out for him and kidnaps other women, so he takes their face to try and transplant it onto her. And Christiane was played by Edith Skobe, and honestly, I just love the way that she approached this film, and the symbolism, especially within the costuming, I've noticed, was just really well thought out. Because at the beginning, the coat that she's wearing, I can tell, kind of symbolized her just kind of feeling trapped in a cage, basically. And then towards the end, where she's just wearing just a simple nightgown, she's free and she's doing what she wants to do. So
that's a great one.
Thank you.
And it also goes to speak to the minimalism.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
needed on this one, because she literally has no face. I don't know if you can see it from here, but it's just very smooth features. And you would see that over and over in other films later on.
Yeah.
And do you watch it in French or do you?
In French.
You do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Anybody have a question? No. That's a great one. All right. So mine is the original Gorilla film. Yes, I had this all printed out. My printer went out on me last night. Was the original originator of the brain, no, not brain, zombies that come out of the grave and attack you. I'm talking about George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
The killers are eating the flesh of the people they murder.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up. probably be a lot more of them as soon as they find out about us.
All persons who die during this crisis, from whatever cause, will come back to life to seek human victims.
I'm telling you, they can't get in here.
Now, this is definitely a film that if you watched it, you would laugh. Okay, you get to see a zombie butt at one point. They're eating the flesh. But what a lot of people don't understand about this movie is that it changed the way that we thought about monsters, because monsters were always created, the Frankenstein's monster, or they would come from outer space or anything like this. These were our loved ones that were coming out of the grave and coming back to us, that we loved them and we didn't want to hurt them, but they had no repercussions whatsoever. So you'll notice in this movie that they don't walk around saying brains. Mm-hmm. They just want to kill people and eat them. Mm-hmm. So the original book for this was written by Romero and John Russo. And so the interesting thing is that after this movie was made, when they wanted to do the sequel, Russo wanted to take it in a different way. He wanted to follow the brains and the fact that they're driven by eating that. And George Romero wanted to take it in kind of the same route. And so they split ways. So if anybody has ever seen Return of the Living Dead, which is more of a comedy, that was going to originally be the Dawn of the Dead, or what would be the Night of the Living Dead sequel. So that's when you hear them talking about brains. And as a matter of fact, that's where you find out where some skeletons come from. Yep.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yes. So this is a great one. Again, I suggest that you watch it in black and white. There are colorized versions of it. Or there is a remake that was done in the 90s?
Yes. Tony Todd.
Yes, by Tom Savini. And it's a great remake, and they are able to give you a different ending in it. So that's a good one. All right. Anybody? Yes. Oh, I worship at the altar of Zack Snyder. I do seriously love what he did. When Sarah Pauli's character comes out after the first morning, and you've seen such a tranquil, nice neighborhood, and then you come out and you see the exact same neighborhood, and it's just nuts. I mean, there's blood and fire and everything. I loved it. And Army of the Dead, for me, was a great, great sequel. I know a lot of people trash it, but I thought it was amazing. All right, well, let's jump into the 1970s.
Oh, boy. So my pick for the 70s was Madhouse from 1974, also starring Vincent Price.
That's right. He's in that.
Perhaps it was inevitable. For years, this man has played the role of Dr. Death. For years, he has pretended to be a hideous, murdering monster.
No!
Now, at last, he has actually become one. American International presents Vincent Price in Madhouse.
Also, Peter Cushing. I should mention that because he's also a legend.
Yes. Honestly, he's great in this movie.
I love the approach that they were taking when they were, from the start of the slasher film and just the direction they were taking it in, starting in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think this movie is overlooked, and I think more people need to.
I overlooked it. This was her favorite Vincent Price movie of all,
yes.
Right? And so first of all, if you ever get a chance to find that, I think it's episode 64, she schools me, takes me to town with some stuff I'd never heard about. And just your love for this one made me go back and watch it and really, really appreciate it more.
Thank you.
So thank you. So tell us more about Madhouse.
So what it is about is Vincent Price, his character's name is Paul. He is an actor. Actually, they reference Vincent Price's past films in this movie, like to give him movie credits. And his character that he's mostly known for is Dr. Death. And one night at a party, his wife is murdered by a Dr. Death, but we don't know until the end whether or not it was him the whole time. And he had started just slowly going insane because of it. And just great plot twist, great writing overall, and great effects, especially for the time.
So
and great makeup.
Yes.
I mean, not in the way that, you know, it was special effects makeup, but he wears this death mask face, the just black and white makeup.
Grease paint. Yeah.
Yeah, just the grease paint really is very effectual.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. 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 Anybody? Questions? Comments? Okay. We're going to go to my 1970s film. Ooh. What could that be? That's yours. So not the first slasher horror that came out in the 70s, but in my opinion, probably the one that set the pace for everything else to come. The original Babysitter Murders.
Mm-hmm.
It's Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
From John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis, I think that was her name. Yeah, she's never done anything else, but very good in this film. But I love this movie because the first one, it gives you absolutely no reason why he's doing this, why he gets focused on her, why he's just laser beamed in coming back to this place. If you've ever seen the movie, has anybody not seen this film? No? You haven't? You're wearing the mask, dude. Okay, that's all right. It's his favorite. You should watch it. It's really, really good. It will give you, you know, motivation. Sure, the Rob Zombie remake is really, you know, is awesome. Yeah. So, and I don't want to go too far in that rabbit hole, but both the original Halloween 2 and the Rob Zombie Halloween 2 just ruin the first movies. So definitely take those in separate quantities. But in this film, you've got Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis. You've got PJ Souls. You've got so many people who would later go on to just be in so many other movies. Be careful. That this just sets the pace for all of these. They ended up having 11 Halloween movies total. 12 because of the most recent one.
Sure.
So they're doing something right in it. If everybody here has seen it, except you, then you know that they go on to do a sequel and they give you a reason why he's doing it. I just don't understand why they did that, honestly. Okay, so now we're to the 80s. Yes.
So my choice was Fright Night from 1985.
There are two guys out in the yard, and I think they're carrying a coffin.
Charlie, do you want to make love or not?
There was a murder last night.
Charlie thinks he saw the victim in this house.
I saw him carry her body out in a plastic bag.
And I chose this because I love the route that they were taking with monster movies at the time. I've always been a sucker for monster movies, but I feel like just 80s monster movies just hit different, to be honest. And you have Roddy McDowall playing a vampire hunter. And also just the iconic line, his dinner's in the oven.
You do that so good.
Even if you haven't seen that movie, I feel like a lot of people will still, I feel like they did make a meme out of that,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And overall, I think it was just well written. The effects were really good. And there were like also hidden things that they didn't talk about, because actually there was research that was done behind the scenes that vampires actually have fruit bat DNA. That's why you have the antagonist eating apples all the time.
Yeah.
And they can occasionally turn into wolves. That's why you see evil turning into a wolf during the middle of the movie. So
yeah, that's an excellent choice. And one of the great things about this movie is, it's again, you know, before the advent of CGI, so much of it was practical effects,
yep.
which really gave you that great up close look. Evil Ed is just one of my absolute favorites.
Yes.
He's really great. But I love the fact that Roddy McDowall is an actor. He's basically an Elvira character.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I saw the eyes pop up. but he's thrust into this world where everything he knows that was fake is now real.
Yep.
And he has to come forward to it and do it.
He was terrified.
He was terrified. don't know if most people know this, there was a sequel to that movie, as a matter of fact. And then they did a remake. I haven't seen the remake, though.
Me neither.
Yeah, some things I just don't need to be done. Yeah. So, fun vampire fact. I don't know if you know this or not, but if a vampire ever attacks you, throw a packet of sugar or salt or toothpicks on the ground, and they will be forced to stop and count them. And then you can get away.
So. Chinese culture, you throw coins on the floor, and they have to pick them up.
Oh, wow. Could I throw my ATM card and run? That might, I don't know, it might not work. So, excellent choice. Mine, I think we may have talked about this movie already. The Thing from John Carpenter.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to, but it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
You guys gotta listen to Gary. He can beat one of those things.
This is an amazing film that builds so much into our fear of the unknown, paranoia. Can we trust the people around us? Can we trust ourselves? The performances in this movie are just off the charts. I cannot realistically look someone in the eye who tells me they didn't like this movie. It's a perfect film. Okay, maybe if it was a little gory at some places, I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have two characters named Windows and Mac in the movie, you know, I mean, that's just. Right, you know, and Keith David's performance is fantastic. Kurt Russell's, Wilford Brimley. I mean, that guy was able to act. You still to this day did not know at what point he was him and what point he wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just love this film. I worship at the altar of John Carpenter up until certain movies, but he was a genius in this film. Mm-hmm. Side note, you got one already. Okay. There's a video game for The Thing that you play, and there's actually a paranoia meter. So if your paranoia gets too much, you lose the game. See, I really want to ask him, but you rose your hand first, so go ahead.
No, he can go first.
No, it's okay.
So we watched with some other friends the 40th anniversary of that one. At the mm-hmm. end, they had after the movie ended, they had about 20 minutes of them going to the special effects.
Oh, yeah.
And it is the coolest thing. When I first saw the movie, I thought, oh, it's a pretty cool practical. And then went through how they did the chest bursting scene, how they did a couple others, how they built that big wall of, I forget what it was called, the sludge and the
parts
and
all that. Yeah.
How they built all, it was one of the coolest things ever. It showed, like, didn't they put a lot of effort in this?
Yes, they did.
And I like that they don't end it neatly.
No CGI, yeah.
I like that they don't end it neatly, there's no CGI, and that way you don't actually know how it ended.
There's a great comic series that Dark Horse did that picks up right after the end of the movie. And Charles and Mac are picked up by two different people. So they go in different ways. So again, you're not sure was one of them a thing or not. A lot of people may not know is that whole dog scene, Stan Winston came in because he was so overwhelmed. He did that and they wanted to give him credit for it. He's like, no, he's doing all the work. I'm just here helping. And it's an amazing scene. But yeah, no, I've heard that too. He was out for like a month. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I could literally talk about this movie for hours. You know, there's so much. Yes.
So there's a lot of great scenes. One of my favorites is whenever they're testing blood.
Whew. That's a tough one. I think I love the ending when everybody's seen it. When Mac and Giles are sitting there. Okay, who is one of them the thing? If they're not, and there's a lot of thing that goes around the internet that says if you watch them real close, you can't see Charles's breath coming out. That's a fallacy. I've looked it up, and you can see his breath. I love that scene because it really is just everything. They're so exhausted. And if one of them is the creature, he's either really intelligent or he's exhausted. Because if he was, he would just kill the other one and then just wait in the snow for somebody to come get him. So I think that's probably. Now, the chestbuster scene is fantastic. I mean, you know, and when the spider head comes out, fantastic. But so many, so many. Okay, we're going to talk about the thing for the rest of the... Okay, behind you first.
Oh, oh gosh.
That is... Okay, so is anybody familiar with Cannibal Holocaust?
Okay.
Okay, okay.
Be warned. It is banned in most countries for a reason. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to let you know now. There was, in fact, like, real animal torture in this movie and very realistic scenes that I'm not going to mention. But I see what they were... I guess I see what they were trying to do, but it is a lot to take in, for sure.
And it's so much to take in that if you read about it, that in England, one of their magistrates sent out an order that made the director produce the 3 stars. Because in their contract, they had to go, I don't know, in hiding for like a month after the movie came out to kind of build up all of the drama and stuff. And because people saw this and they saw real acts of violence, mm-hmm. the judge was like, you either show them up or we're going to, you know, start investigation into their murder and yep. you're our prime suspect. Yep. And of course they showed up. The turtle didn't show up.
The turtle did not show up.
But no, I hate to say I love a movie like that, but it was very well done. And with the advent later on of Faces of Death and those type of movies, it really started to blur the line of what was real and what was not. So that's a great point. You get a sticker for sure. That's how you bring it. Okay, so let's jump to the 90s. We got 3 decades. All right, awesome.
Okay.
Yay. Thanks to my tech crew.
So I picked Scream from 1996.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Well, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
I think, honestly, it is a slasher film, which is very common, but I feel like it was the first slasher film of its kind, personally. And also, I picked it because my favorite killer wasn't it? Stu Mocker, played by Matthew Lillard, who just did such a good job, and just everything that was involved in making this movie happen, just absolutely love it.
Yeah. So, macabre question, what was your favorite kill in that movie?
Oh, God. Honestly, the very first one with Drew Barrymore.
That was really incredible that such a major star that everybody's like, oh, she's in this. And then she's gone, you know. But I love Rose McGowan's death when she's trying to get through the doggy door on the garage. And it just keeps
burning. They made fun of it in Scary Movie.
Yes. Just... Oh, my God, I love that movie. But it was very meta, and that was the first time that they really drew you into, hey, we know what horror movies are, and we know the rules of horror movies. Right. Yes, mm-hmm. And then here they are. And look, you're an idiot because you're breaking the rules.
Yes.
Yes, that was great.
I just want to say Scream is my favorite, I guess you can say Cooper moments is when Matthew Lillard is, like, on the phone, and Stu, like, takes it and then throws the phone at his head, and he's like...
That's awesome.
So that's always my favorite take because it's like that's genuine, like, panic. What the hell, dude?
Yeah. If you ever see him in person, he's a great guy. He's got tons of stories about that. Yes, it's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So my 19th is right. That is Full Tilt Boogie. Yeah. Okay. It is the classic From Dusk Till Dawn.
Everybody be cool. You be cool. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Low profile. You understand the meaning of the words low profile?
Sure. 2 of America's most dangerous criminals have taken hostages.
What is this?
It's called a punch.
I'm going to ask you one question, and all I want is a yes or no answer. Do you want to live through this?
Yes.
Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Now, I don't know if anybody has not seen this one. Raise your hand if you've not seen From Dusk Till Dawn. Damn. okay, go home tonight and find this movie and watch it. So it's directed by Robert Rodriguez. It stars George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino, okay, as the Gecko Brothers. So the first half of this film is they've robbed a bank. They've kidnapped a woman. They're on the run, okay? They're going down to Mexico to meet someone to get them across the border. And then the movie changes to a completely different film. I'm not going to tell you anything else that except Salma Hayek. Okay, so I can't tell you a lot, but there's also a version out there that called the Full Tilt Boogie version, which is a behind-the-scenes look at making the movie. So if you like this movie, which I saw in the theaters, and the ending totally blew me away, watch it and then go back and watch the Full Tilt Boogie. Yes, sir. Okay.
So Quentin Tarantino is an executive producer in this movie. Mm-hmm. He cast himself, because he was in charge of casting, as the guy who licks liquor off Salma Hayek's leg and is her feet in the movie, which I think is the funniest thing given is the jokes about.
I think it's the most practical thing. I mean, I think, you know, okay, well what am I going to do? I'm going to be that guy.
I guess I'll take one for the team.
That's it. All right, well, let's jump to the 2000s. We're getting near the end.
Oh, boy. So I picked Ginger Snaps from 2000.
Let's get out of here.
Ginger!
What was it?
A big dog, maybe.
Whoa.
Whoa? That's it? Whoa?
Think you see werewolves a lot?
Did I change last night? Howl at the moon.
How do you feel?
Wicked.
So this movie it's a werewolf movie. I would also say coming of age movie too. Believe
would
it
you
not.
Say it was a period piece?
Yep, I would say that. So you have these two sisters, Bridget and Ginger, played by Emily Perkins and Catherine Isabel. They have this obsession with death, and they make a pact to die together. And they're probably about 15, 16. They kind of are just trying to get through high school together because just the world around them just sucks. How do I explain this? Things start happening, and then Ginger becomes a werewolf, and basically, Bridget is just trying to get her to stop doing things she's not supposed to be
doing.
Bad
dog.
And, yeah, pretty much. Just trying to get her things she's not supposed to be doing because she knows that it's just going to get her in trouble, basically. And then it just goes right into the sequel. They kind of just pick up where they left off.
Yeah.
And I also love it because I love just what they were doing with horror films in the 2000s.
Yeah.
It was just very, like, I feel like very dark era, very macabre era.
And you don't have to be female to appreciate and enjoy
yes.
the things that Ginger is going through.
Yes.
I totally agree. That's a great pick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I definitely think it's come a long way compared to what it used to be. There is still, sadly, and I'll acknowledge Madhouse does kind of have this problem too, even though I love this movie so much. It kind of portrays mental health or mental illness as like just something so terrible and it makes you evil, which isn't really true. And I definitely think it's been improving, but I think there's still a way to go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Psycho? Okay. That's a... Oh, you have? Okay. Okay. That is a very early representation of how not to portray in my opinion.
Yeah.
Again, it is a classic. It is on everybody's list about how great the movie is. But again, you know, they don't treat his illness. They treat his crimes.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
No.
Great question. You get a sticker. All right. Moving on. I don't want to hear anything about this, okay?
Oh, boy.
It is the best Jason movie of all times. Jason in Space. I'm talking about Jason X.
What the hell is going on?
Jason Voorhees, that's what's going on.
He's an unstoppable killing machine.
Guys, it's okay. He just wanted his machete back.
How do we get off the ship?
I don't know.
Look, we're gonna be all right.
What? Are you high?
Uh-oh.
guys might want to run.
Sure, what I say? Give me your sticker back. Give me your sticker back. Yes. Is this in line with all of the other movies? No, it's not. It's Jason in friggin' space. But I love what they do with this movie. It's fun. The kills are very interesting. I mean, he puts one girl's head into liquid nitrogen. And then he gets the upgrade through the stupidest. Hey, look, we just killed Jason. Let's go grab a Paps, you know, and leaves him there. But I love it. I have so much fun watching this movie. And literally, I love to see certain Friday the 13th fans, their heads blow up when I say that this is my favorite one. But it is. It's a horrible movie. I know, but I love it. And that's why I love my show, is because it's fan favorite. And I'm not wrong. I'm just different. Yep. Oh, okay. All right. Let's jump to 2010s. Thank you. 2010s.
Okay. So mine was Lights Out from 2016.
Each one of us is being haunted by this thing.
Mom?
Hey, Martin, what's up? Did we wake you?
What?
Lights Out.
Yep. And honestly, I picked it. I remember watching this movie in theaters. And then since then, I was terrified after watching it. Like, there are even times to this day where I get scared in the dark. Like, because I'm like, is Diana going to pop out and try to kill me? Do I need to turn the lights on? What do I need to do? And honestly, Alicia Villa-Bailey, who played Diana, just did so amazing. She scared the ever-living crap out of me. So, yeah.
That's a great one. I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my list because now I've heard from two. Yes, right.
Absolutely.
How long is anybody in here until 6 o'clock? So do you want to spend some more time?
Oh, really? Oh, awesome. Wait, okay, I was thinking.
Until 6, maybe?
No. Yeah, we could go back and talk about how great Jason X is for at least that time.
I really love that movie.
See? Because, right there.
I just love stupidity.
It is. It's just, hi, we're going to have premarital sex and smoke marijuana.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
And,
you know.
And the one thing I give that movie credit is that at least it's in space the whole time, whereas, like, Days of Just Manhattan, it's like 10 minutes of Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
actually in space.
Right. And the fact that Cronenberg is a guest at the very beginning of it.
Part 5 is underrated. Part 6 and 7 are definitely some of the best ones.
Like, Tommy's great. Okay, quick question. When did Jason get his hockey mask? Three? All right, you're all great. Okay, yes.
What was your opinion on Darkness Falls?
Darkness Falls?
Oh, with the Tooth Fairy?
With the Tooth Fairy?
Oh, wow.
Terrified the living hell out of
me. Sorry.
And then Lights Out.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's a pairing. I like that. I thought it was fun. As a very particular story, we were at San Diego at the Star Trek convention, the year that movie came out, and we got to meet the director and like two of the stars, and they had comic books, and we got comic books signed and stuff. And I think that's the only time I ever saw it, to be honest. But I remember really enjoying it.
We're not sleeping during.
Question: have you seen Haunting of Helena? Helena. It's another Tooth Fairy horror movie. I strongly recommend it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Tooth Fairy with The Rock?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to reverse the clock a little bit. Since we're talking about funny deaths and stuff, what's your opinion on Jeepers Creepers 1?
Oh, I love Jeepers Creepers. But the one question I have is, how does this guy who only shows up 26 years... at once every 26 years or whatever, not only have a vehicle, but has a person, personalized license plate. I don't understand that, you know?
I love the movie so much. It was my first, like, I used to be like a scaredy cat towards it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my mom and stepdad would get angry at me going, like, it's just fake, it's fake, it's fake. And so I finally sat down and watched Jeepers Creeper, and I just couldn't stop laughing
yeah.
the entire time watching it. Like, I remember my favorite scene is the couple like running away from him and gets to this house and is banging on the door, asking the old woman, like, can we use your phone? Can we use your phone? She's, I'll call 911. Walks out. And so they have this whole conversation and turn around and you see her body, and you're like, oh, okay, she called 911. No, he took the shotgun that she was threatening with him and jammed it through her torso and is parading her around like a puppet. And I think about that moment so much.
Yeah, and you know, if you could hold on to that and know that it's just, it's all fake, you know, that's the way to watch a movie, you know, get scared, get, you know, and then, okay, well, that was fake and I can move on, you know. It's, yeah, but the second one was good. It was good. It was a good follow-up.
I really like the second one. A lot of people have strong opinions about it not being good. I thought it was funny. It took itself a bit more seriously, mm-hmm. I think, but at the same time put out way dumber concepts. Like,
yeah.
So the man who is driving a truck and trying to run people over is now throwing around ninja stars to
cut top. Bone ninja stars, as a matter of fact. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Thanks for coming.
The third one was just ridiculous. I remember watching it going, like, I'm not having any fun watching this. Like, I'm not scared. I'm not laughing. This is just...
Yeah, we're waiting for it to end.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, I'm ready. I'm ready to eject this DVD and throw it in the trash. Like
like a throwing star? Yes.
What is your opinion on the Stranger?
You know what? I've never seen it.
I love it.
I've never seen it. Okay. I know of it. I think I even own it, but I haven't seen it yet.
If you're gonna watch it, I recommend doing it when no one else is home.
Oh, that's how I love watching horror movies. My favorite way to watch is I used to have a little little DVD player that only had like a 6-inch screen, and I would put on headphones and then watch a movie. I watched High Tension. Have you ever seen that the Fritch film? I watched that movie and Wreck. Both that way. It's an amazing movie.
Oh,
it is. It's great. But those are the way to really watch one of those movies, is to get into it, you know, so there's nothing around you and all you've got is what's going on in front of you.
And honestly, I'm super excited about the remake that they're doing.
Of The Strangers? Or
mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, they don't need to redo Wreck.
There's a new one coming out, and I am super excited, and honestly, I love the whole concept. And, you know, totally great to watch it in a cabin by yourself or just with somebody else.
Yeah. There you go. Well, you can bring a blankie.
Okay.
Well, that's cool. No, I'll have to watch it. Like I said, I'm pretty positive I own it. Okay. You had a question? Sure.
I've been trying to get all of my friends into it. I finally got him to watch the first one. What's your opinion on the Puppet Master?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
It is my all-time favorite idea.
Yeah.
He's got a box set.
Yeah. So I've met Charles Band, okay? And he is hilarious, all right? And so I asked him once about those movies. I actually started off asking him about Ginger Dead Man.
Get the comics, by the way.
Yeah?
The comics are great.
Oh, that's awesome. So we started talking a little bit, and then I said, man, Puppet Master. You know, clowns, everybody's creeped out by clowns and stuff, but everybody from my generation remembers, you know, there was that one kid in the neighborhood who would have the little puppet, you know, and do that. I said, how did you, you know, come up with stuff like that? And I don't remember his answer, I'll be honest. So I guess I shouldn't have built this story up so well. But I remember that the whole thing was just, it was something from his childhood that stuck with him for a long time. And so to come up with those creatures, and man, I even love the ones where it's, you go back to where he first makes the puppets.
Retro.
Yeah, where it's like in France or something, you know?
Yeah,
and the Nazi time traveler, whatever, guys, you know.
Because the whole story was based around, these are souls that died during World War II and wanted like a second chance.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like all of them have like tragic backstories. Like the one with the tunneler drill. I think I was like dropping facts on you, like scene after scene.
I've been
pausing the movie going like, so let me go on ahead and tell you.
Oh, you're one of those people.
We aren't going to see it until movie four.
Comes into a 3-hour.
Like, uh-huh.
The tunneler was an ex-Nazi who went against Hitler, and Hitler was like, okay, well, you could go and work in the salt mines till you died. Now he's just a puppet that follows orders by Blade. You know, the guy with pinpricks as eyes. Who has Blade.
For me, it's always Pistol Pete. I love that guy. You know, I love that one. All right, so we are now at 2010. It's my 2010? Oh,
yes.
Okay. Okay, so greatest meta movie of all times.
So the lambs have come to the killing floor.
Something weird is going on.
What is that thing?
The cabin in the woods.
I think I can get it to go down.
Do we want to go down?
Rated R in theaters April 13th.
You can see my screen capture here is from, you know, the whiteboard in their room. This is just amazing. Who had merman? You know, so many things in this movie are sheer perfection. And I will fight anybody who has an issue with it. Okay, has anybody not seen it? Okay, I don't want to ruin it. Okay, with did you not see it? I'm going to ruin it for you. Okay, when Sigourney Weaver shows up at the end, y'all, I was like, what? You know, again, another perfect example of you've got that somebody in there and you're not expecting it. And she shows up and then it's like bringing it all together and you're like, wow, did not see this coming.
It's so funny, but it's funny because that whole like time period, Sigourney Weaver was just a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
She was involved.
Yeah.
The same time period.
I know.
She gets crushed by
everybody dies in an awesome way.
And Paul, she gets crushed by a spaceship.
Oh, that's true.
And
yeah.
It's funny because it's like, she was at so many cameos at that point, like 20 times.
Yeah.
Don't know why. Sigourney Weaver.
Hey, Galaxy Quest. It's not a cameo, but yes, all the different kind of monsters that were there. And they were taking bets on what would come, because it wasn't their choice to send out monsters. It was what those people would think of. So they were taking bets as to what it was. And I love the fact, he's still out of the room. I love the fact that the one character was just so fascinated about the merman. And he's always disappointed at the moment. And the merman is the one that kills him. You know, I love that. Loki?
Oh, yeah. I definitely recommend, if you like that movie, to watch the Dead Meat Kill Count.
Oh, yeah. My daughter watches. I'll ask her, hey, did you see this movie yet? No, but I saw the Kill Count.
Yeah. I watch the Kill Count religiously.
Yeah. It's a really good podcast.
I think he's doing Hannibal and Killing...
The series?
Yeah.
Or the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
So I think 2010s has like really bad ones and really, really good ones. I think Robert
You're right. Because
I think Robert Eggers is the best horror director working right now.
Yeah.
Because I watched The Witch and it was amazing. I watched The Lighthouse and blew me away. Have you seen The Lighthouse? It is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's not too late to back out. I'm just saying, you could, if you know, if you just. Really? Like, you really like...
Willem Dafoe was terrifying in that. Like, Robert Pattinson didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, but I want to go to The Witch.
Oh, I love The Witch.
Really?
First of all, I think Anya Taylor-Joy is one of the best actresses working right now. I think she's gotten typecast.
I agree with you. Okay.
But she did... Also, I think Robert Eggers, the amount of work he does on his movies is what made it good. I mean, we watched The Northman together. We talked so much about how wonderful it was.
Yeah.
Wonderful, but then as you think about it a little bit more, it's like I really just didn't know what was going on. But I also think that was kind of the point of the movie, is that you really aren't.
Mission succeeded.
Yeah. Until like maybe the third or fourth time you watch it, it's not like a fucking.
So I'll never understand it, is what we're saying. Yeah. Look, I love you, but literally, I did a show on another podcast where I get to talk about things I didn't like, and I came up with a list of movies that I know I'm supposed to like and I don't, and The Vavitch is on that list. Yeah, yeah.
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 Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. That's
yeah.
I
yeah, that's on my list to watch.
Oh,
yeah.
The Lighthouse is one of my favorite ones.
It's,
wow.
It's
because it's the one that made me want to crawl on my skin.
Oh, yeah.
Not in the, oh my God, jump scare, but oh my God, why is he still staring at me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I've heard the acting was really good.
Yeah. And when I say, because they didn't. Okay. So Willem Dafoe, his monologue. Robert Pattinson did not know what Willem was about to do.
Uh-huh.
And he's just watching because he was also very convincing. So he was just terrified the entire time during the monologue.
Oh. Okay. Okay. But still, I might give The Lighthouse another try, but not The Vavitch. I don't know. Oh, me too. I am. Oh, thank you. Wakey, wakey. That did it?
Yep.
Okay. Where are we at? 2010s. Okay. All right. Okay. I figured y'all'd like that.
Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
You know, you're the first person I ever shown this place to.
And why am I so special?
Because soon, we'll be Christopher and Mary Robin. We should be close now.
We're not going to find them.
We will. Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, we were friends for many years, and they're out there.
Christopher, we need to leave. Now.
I really need to find out what's happened here, okay?
Okay.
So bad. And the Pooniverse. Oh,
the Pooniverse. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I am too. Did you see on the actual like movie poster for it? I didn't see it at first. They have the sleep experiment demon in the corner.
Yep, they do.
Oh wow.
And I was just like, I am dreading whatever in the hell that is.
She loves it.
I do.
So tell us why you love it.
So I love it because I love like niche things like that, really. And the moment that I found out that these characters were going public domain and they were going to make me, I'm like, where do I sign up? Tell me when and where. Please tell me we're getting it here to watch it. That's true. It was Valentine's Day.
So sweet.
Worst night of your life.
Well. Oh, really?
It really is one of those movies. Like, I hated every moment of it, but I couldn't stop. And, like, it wasn't... My favorite horror movies are always, like, the B-list horror movies that are more comedy than anything else. Because if you just sit there in disbelief, you can kind of get into it. But if you're really thinking, you're just going to laugh. It struck nothing. And I was like, I don't think I've ever seen a movie that has struck nothing in me, but I'm just here. I don't hate it. I'm not enjoying it. I'm not laughing. I'm just here watching.
Experiencing it. Yeah, yeah.
The new Toxic Avenger is coming out.
I know. Peter Dinklage.
If you want to absorb something that's actually really enjoyable, similar to just what are you watching, that's
going
to be that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I know they're doing a whole universe of these characters.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that they should, because Sherlock Holmes is now public domain. I think that Sherlock Holmes should show up about all of these killings, and the suspects are Winnie the Pooh and Eeyore and Mickey above Steamboat that. Willie, you know. Hold on, but
they were well.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Honestly, do you have a point? I would watch it.
Yeah. That's why we're all in this room.
The fact that they make Tinkerbell a heroin addict and like she thinks that it's pixie dust.
How's she gonna fly, you know?
And also you have Bambi's mother coming back for revenge.
Yes.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Honestly, the first time I saw that was when Mad had their show on Cartoon Network. They did that. They animated Bambi's mom coming back to life, killing the hunter that shot her.
As a zombie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Bambi the Reckoning when we watched Winnie the Pooh Part 2.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Pinocchio. They need to make that thing just as horrific as it. I don't care about the movie. Make the puppet as horrific as you can. And I will buy it.
That's the crazy part, though. The creator of the Chucky puppet, they were having him work on Pinocchio.
Really?
Yeah.
They did say that.
Wow.
I'm excited.
So I've really got to go and watch this film now.
Yes.
Maybe not the first one. Maybe just read the synopsis.
I've heard that the second one is much better.
There's more character development.
Well, I mean,
and
it is just saying...
It's less horrible than the first one?
it's like saying having diarrhea... Or no, taking a solid crap is better than diarrhea. It's both not good, but...
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
One's way more enjoyable.
All right. Well, I don't think my choice will have nearly this amount of discussion.
Oh.
This may not be a movie that a lot of you have seen. It is called The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
It's a wolf. Or maybe it's a werewolf.
No, let me just make this perfectly clear. There is no such thing as werewolves. Our killer is a guy, and I'm going to find him, and I'm going to kill... And we're going to bring him to justice.
We have every reason to believe that this monster will show up again tonight. I won't ask you to pray with me because of the goddamn lawyers.
Okay, right now it's not streaming anywhere. It was on Netflix. I ended up having to buy it on DVD. Yay, physical media.
I haven't
Yay.
Really? Okay. So this is the movie. It's obviously about a werewolf in a snow town, Snow Hollow. And it starts off with this couple who they get out of the hot tub. The boyfriend goes inside, and the wife is attacked and killed. And so this is Robert Forster's last movie, and his character dies in the movie. And I don't know if it's the fact that you know that or not, but when you're watching it, you can almost see him just coming down. So he is the sheriff of the town, but he is in a bad way, and it's like he's fixing to retire. And his son, who is a divorced alcoholic, is the one who's really running the sheriff's office. And so all of a sudden you have this horrific crime by what cannot be a werewolf, but is a werewolf. And they try to figure out what's going on. And he's trying to keep his life together with his dad, getting sicker and sicker. And it definitely has one of the coolest twists I've ever seen in the movie. And if you haven't seen it, go on eBay and buy a copy of it. I think you could pay for it too on Amazon if you want. But I really, really, I've gotten it this week and I've already watched it twice more, because it's just the story in it is incredible, and it's all practical effects. So when you finally do get to see the creature, it's really, really, really cool, really scary. But again, got a great twist to it, so there is no Winnie the Pooh in it, but there's a bad puppy. Okay, so that is it. I have to tell y'all personally, thank you very much. I really appreciate you all being in here, I really do appreciate that you guys came out and participate. So even if you didn't participate, you can come get a sticker. I'm so happy and ready to. But my podcast is called Fave Five for Fans, and all of the horror lovers in here, look for a podcast called Fright Club. It's a really great. It's a top five list, but it's from Hope and George, who are from Columbus, Ohio. They absolutely love horror films. They put on shows every month. They do a live show from it. It's a wonderful short little podcast that you can watch while you're driving home. So again, thank you, Lily, so much. I really appreciate it. You're a great host.
Thank you. As always, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So thank y'all, and stay frightful, my friends.
Woo.
Hi, Grab. This is Fight Drew.
You go right ahead. Just to do it.
This is Fight Drew.